Hello and welcome to Journey of the Monkey King with myself, Quiva, and my friend MJ.
Yo!
And this week we're on to chapter 30 of Journey to the West. So this chapter is going to have a lot. For one, it's just very long, but also it's going to continue the story of Hundred Flower Shame and a relationship that is violent and abusive, and this chapter in particular is going to have other violence against women, and in particular alcohol fueled violence and murder and cannibalism. So
here be dragons, folks. Yeah. No shame in skipping this one if you're having a bad day.
Pretty much. So all that said, to lighten the mood a bit, at the end of the last recording, MJ, I said that there was going to be something in this episode that I incorrectly said at some point wasn't going to happen.
Okay.
So I'd like to give you a few options so you can make a prediction as to which one of these is going to happen in this chapter.
All right, I'm up for this.
Okay, so number one, Sun Wukong shoots lasers out of his eyes.
Please be that one!
Number two, Sun Wukong's teacher Subodhi shows up again. Number three, the horse talks and turns back into a dragon.
All of these sound awesome so far.
Number four, Guanyin just fucking murders Wukong and he's dead.
I feel like, yeah, well, he'll come back. We all know he'll come back if that is the case.
Or lastly, a Lady Whitebone does actually show up again and is a love interest for Wukong.
Yeah, nothing says I'm into you like repeated murder of the same person over and over again. Even though it's not murder, you know, I guess that's a kind of like back and forth flirty banter when you've got that level of magic. But Subodhi coming back would be interesting plot-wise. But you know what I want here, Quiva. I am a simple queer. If there is a stone monkey about to shoot lasers out of their eyes, then I am there for it. So on the betting, if we're going for it, I would say possibly the horse dragon thing. I do want the best for the horse dragon. You know, he seems chill. Team stone monkey laser eyes. Stone monkey laser eyes.
Okay,
so, and if you know me at all, you know I'm very anti-chanting. I think it's cult-like and weird. And if you, this has got me in a chanting mood. You know, this is very important to me.
Okay, well, I'm not going to tell you yet. We'll find out when we get to it in the story.
Thank you. I appreciate this.
So, when we left off, the pilgrims had been completely split up. Sun Wukong, having been banished, returned to the Flower Fruit Mountain. Tripitaka is being treated as a guest by the king of the precious Image Elephant Kingdom. Mm. Xia Wujing has been captured by the monster Yellow Robe, and Zhu Baji is cowering in the bushes.
Cool.
So Yellow Robe, post-victory, has a think about why Wujing and Baji would come back to attack him after he let them go. And he correctly reckons that Hundred Flower Shame must have sent a letter with Tripitaka asking for help from her family. So he's furious and he goes to confront her, and he calls her a filthy bitch and says, "When I first brought you here, you didn't utter half a word of protest. You had silk to wear and gold to put on. Whatever you needed, I went out to procure. You've been enjoying the goods of all four seasons and my deep affection every day. Why do you still think only of your parents with no care at all for our marriage?"
Oh, no.
So she's...
That's just so horrifying on so many levels.
Yeah, your kidnapper rapist comes in and screaming at you.
You should be grateful.
So she's fucking terrified. and kneels down and asks him why he's saying this. And he says he knows about the letter she sent with the Tong monk. Why else would those other monks come back to take her away? And she denies sending a letter, and he says he's captured the Tang monk's second disciple, and he's going to question him about it. So, sorry, to sidetrack, like, this very serious plot that's happening at this moment, I do want to say one thing that I thought was kind of weird. He calls Wu Jing Tripitaka's second disciple, and there's a weirdly fawning footnote going into how a specific Japanese translation fixed Yellow Robe calling Wu Jing the second disciple to say he's the third disciple instead, because that's what he's called everywhere else in the novel. And Anthony Yu has a little... Anthony Yu has a footnote that says that amendment is unwarranted because they fail to take into account the simple, authorial use of point of view throughout the long novel. The narrator's repeated attempts to inform the reader that different characters at different times and places also have different forms of knowledge, as well as his consistent intrusion into the narrative itself through commentary or direct address to the reader, which should indicate a growing and sophisticated awareness of the constraints and possibilities of fictive narrative. And like, yeah, I'm just like, yeah, like the author had a theory of mind. I don't think that's a massive deal or needs super pointing out. I don't know.
I don't know. This guy and you clearly have something in the background going on. I adore petty academic disputes.
He was just really annoyed at this one particular Japanese translation.
Yeah. Just this fucking one guy who fucked up in a very small way, and he's just like, well, this is everything that's wrong with translation. Fuck this guy.
It's not like Anthony hasn't like made his own little corrections to the translation as well. Like, I think was it the last episode they had the thing where or the one before it where he corrected the line about the Yellow Robes temple being nonetheless being an evil place, rather than saying obviously it's an evil place.
Yeah. But then I think we also said that this might be like a sort of ironic humor, and it's just like,
yeah,
you know, despite all this overwhelming evidence that this is a bad place where evil happens, turns out it was a bad place where evil happened, which I quite like. But I still have the image in my head of him just kind of giving up on that pun when they're fighting, what was it, the Yellow Wind King? And there's just this very specific pun, and he just kind of went, look at, lads, trust me, if you spoke this particular ancient Chinese dialect, you'd be rolling in the aisles, but I'm just done and I can't.
Yeah, it's the particular phrasing is I think it was the dew to fall cave, which he does not explain at all what that means or why it would be a pun. And I think that is reused again. That phrase is reused in at least one other poem. Upcoming chapter, I think. And he doesn't try to explain it there either.
I it just gives me the phrasing used for some reason gave me vibes of my ex boyfriend gently holding our former housemate who was doing his final year software development project and had made one little error in the code that he couldn't find. We were just kind of like, yes, we'll take care of you. 2 days later, I was having a small party, and he ran downstairs looking like he'd just found God and needed to tell everyone, shouted, I forgot to tell the button, it was a button, burst into tears and ran back up.
I know that feeling. I know exactly that experience.
So I was just kind of picturing the translation equivalent of that, not you in that position.
Anyway, back to the depressing plot.
Yes.
Hundred Flower Shame steadies herself and tells Yellow Robe to go question Wu Jing. She has nothing to fear from it. There was no letter. He'll back up that story. If he says there was, I will gladly let you beat me to death.
Oh, bitch, you better not snitch here.
So Yellow Robe drags her by the hair to where he has Wu Jing tied up and throws her to the floor, pulls out his scimitar, and asks Wu Jing if Hundred Flower Shame sent a letter to the king to tell them to rescue her. So,
bitch, you better stick to the line here.
Yeah, Wu Jing, seeing this man drag a woman in by the hair, throw her to the ground, pull out a sword, and angrily demand to know if she tried to escape him, has the cop on to lie.
Well, thank fuck it was him and not Baji.
Yeah, Baji would just say it straight away.
Yeah.
He makes up a story about how when the pilgrimage arrived to the precious Image Elephant Kingdom and got their passport stamped, the king was still asking everyone who passed through for any information about what happened to his daughter and showing everyone a portrait of her. And he claims that Tripitaka saw this and described the woman that they saw in Yellow Robe's home, and the king knew it was his daughter, and they were sent back to rescue her, and there was no letter. And he says, if you're going to kill someone, kill old Sand, leave her out of it.
Ah, okay. Yeah, he gets my kudos.
So Yellow Robe believes him, throws down his sword, picks up Hundred Flower Shame and asks her to forgive him. He straightens her hair and fixes up her jewelry with, according to the narration, great tenderness and amiability, and hugs her. And he asks her to take a seat and apologize to her again. And this is very infuriating. The narration then says, "The princess, after all, was a rather fickle woman. When she saw how penitent he became, she, too, had a change of heart."
Oh, that is what happens to abuse victims. Fuck Anthony, you. I hope that's the narration, actually, so he wasn't in charge of that.
Well, yeah, Wu Cheng'en, maybe, or whoever wrote it.
Yeah, oh god. If ever a cunt deserved the full Guanyin treatment, it's just this character.
So I'm not even sure why it says that, because it's not like she starts like suddenly fawning over him again or anything. What she does immediately after that line is actually asking him as a favor to loosen Yellow Robe's, to loosen Wu Jing's ropes that he's tied up with and let him be a bit more comfortable. So her immediate action is actually to try and help Wu Jing, not anything else.
Yeah, we're getting a little bit of an unreliable narration here.
Yellow Robe actually has him completely untied and locked in a cell instead. After Wu Jing is put in a cell, Yellow Robe orders food and wine to be brought out. And when he and Hundred Flower Shame are starting to get a bit tipsy, Yellow Robe now decides it's time he met his father-in-law. So Hundred Flower Shame says not to go. She says her father didn't win his kingdom in combat. He inherited the throne. He's never even left the city. He'd be easily frightened and terrified if a monster like Yellow Robe showed up to him.
I just hope they kill each other. They're both terrible, terrible people, and what they've done to this poor woman is inexcusable. I hope they have slow, painful, and simultaneous deaths.
It's not going to be resolved in a way either of us are happy with.
Of course it isn't.
She says, after being warned that kind of he's too monstrous, he says, oh, if you put it like that, I can change. And he transforms his appearance into a handsome-looking young man. And there is, of course, a poem about how pretty he is now.
I hate him.
So Hundred Flower Shame does warn him that, like, you know, if you're going to do this, you're going to have to not let your real appearance slip, no matter how drunk you get. Which is what we in the business call foreshadowing. So Yellow Robe can also mount the clouds and fly just like the pilgrims. So he arrives pretty quickly at the precious Image Elephant Kingdom. He announces himself at the gate as the third imperial son-in-law. And when the court gets this news, they realize it must be the monster who kidnapped Hundred Flower Shame, and they're unsure what to do. One of the ministers...
Kill the fucker!
He's a monster. Like, they don't know how to fight him.
Yeah, that's fair.
One of the ministers says if he wants to come in, we probably can't do anything to stop him anyway, so we might as well just send him an invitation. But when they finally see him, they think he couldn't possibly be a demon who's far too hot.
Oh, God.
he's clearly a very civilized man. There's no way he could be evil.
Sexy, civilized man.
Yeah. So the king immediately starts calling him son-in-law, and he asks where he's from, when did he marry the princess, and why did he not come to meet him before today?
I hate this man.
So he says he's from the current moon cave of the Casserole Mountain, 300 miles to the east, which is all true, in fairness. And the king asks him, how the hell did he meet, or how the hell did Hundred Flower Shame end up there? So Yellow Robe says he's always been fond of hunting, and 13 years ago he was on a ride with his servants when they came across a large tiger who was carrying a young girl. And he shot the tiger with a single arrow and rescued the girl and brought her back to their village.
Oh, cool. He's making himself a hero here.
Yep. Asked about who she was, she never said anything about being a princess or a kingdom, and she claimed to be a peasant and asked to stay with him and marry him.
Claimed. I would also want to disown my family. So plausible, but also fuck. No, it's not. It's not plausible. Fuck you. Come on.
Yeah, there was just this tiger carrying a girl, and I shot the tiger, and then she was fine, and she asked to stay and lied about her family, and that, yeah. So after their wedding, he was about to slaughter the tiger, which I guess was not killed by the arrow, and they just somehow brought it back to the village and were keeping it. But Hundred Flower Shame asked him to spare the tiger, as it had brought them together.
Love that little detail. So he's made himself incredibly sexy and charming and
yep.
Very abusive, narcissistic sociopath. That's, yeah.
But years later, the tiger became a monster spirit, you see. And when a group of pilgrims from the Tang Empire were passing through, the tiger killed them, stole their passport, and started impersonating them. And that monk sitting next to you is that tiger, not the real Tripitaka.
Sure. So is the king dumb enough to believe this?
So the king asks him how the hell he could possibly know that. And his explanation is, I live in the mountains. When I eat tiger meat. What I wear is tiger skins. I sleep with them and I rise with them. How could I not recognize them?
I know a tiger when I see one.
Yeah.
Someone kill this man.
The king demands, if this is true, then make the tiger turn back into its true form. So Yellow Robe asks for half a cup of clean water, and he recites a spell called the Dim Eyes Still Body Magic, and then spits the water on top of Tripitaka and turns him into a tiger.
Well, it's a good plan.
Yeah. So the king is terrified, and many of his officials just run and hide, but a few military officials are brave enough to rush in and try and kill the tiger. But the Tang monk was not yet fated to die, and he had the secret protection of the light and darkness, the guardians, the sentinels, the Oxford comma, and the protectors of the faith in the air, and was protected from harm.
The Oxford comma.
Yes, that was definitely in the book. That's definitely not a joke that I threw in.
I love it.
So basically they can't actually hurt Tripitaka because he has protection from the guardian spirits. So realizing they can't hurt the tiger, they tie him up in chains and put him in a large iron cage instead, and put him away into another room. So the king then orders the court of imperial entertainments to prepare a huge banquet to thank the imperial son-in-law for saving him from Tripitaka.
I hate them both so much.
So after the feast, Yellowrobe retires to the Silver Peace Hall, where he is served in private by 18 young palace ladies, singing, dancing, and pouring wine for him.
This is your son-in-law!
Yeah.
It's probably a custom. I just hate this so much. I hate them both. I hate them.
So when it's getting late into the night, he's getting very, very drunk, and loses his self-control a bit. So he jumps up laughing, changes back into his original form, grabs one of the women playing music, and bites her head off.
Great.
The rest of the women run off terrified, but they're just as afraid of causing a disturbance in the palace as they are of the monster, so they quietly find hiding spots without making any noise, which tells you something about how the king treats his servants.
Yeah, I will not lose sight of the fact that he is also a real piece of shit.
Yeah, they casually mentioned in the previous chapter that he, like, had a shitload of maids and eunuchs beaten to death as well.
Yeah. That kid was fucked from the get-go. Like, she really was, and the only thing I can do is imagine, as I think I said before in my head, her running off to live with Wallpaper Lady, and, you know, they can raise the kids together and, you know, just, like, be happy. Steal a bunch of shit on your way out.
So, yeah, that would be better than what happens.
This is what fan fiction is for, folks.
So then Yellowrobe relaxes by himself, taking bites out of the corpse in between glasses of wine. So that's nice. Nice. Way to spend an evening.
Yep.
So, meanwhile, word has been spreading around the city of the Chinese monk who the king was treating as a guest was really a tiger monster. And this eventually reaches the inn that the pilgrims had checked into. And the dragon horse is enjoying some hay in the stables when he overhears some people talking about it. And he thinks, well, fuck. That's not good. That monster must have done this. He thinks Sun Wukong, who he calls Big Brother, is long gone. And there's been no news from the other two. I'd better do something myself.
Yay!
So he bites through his reins, shakes off his saddle, turns back into a dragon, and flies off to the palace.
Fuck yes!
Apparently he could have just done this at any point.
I do love that as a detail.
He just hasn't bothered at any point up until now.
Well, he's just like, look, I'm a horse. That's all they told me to do. I'm not overstepping. I mean, in a lot of ways, we could all be more like Dragon Horse. You know, don't do the extra work. Don't do more than what you're paid for. You know your worth.
So he finds Yellowrobe still in his normal monster form, still eating by himself. So the dragon transforms again into a sexy palace maid and walks in and bows to Yellowrobe and says he's here to pour wine for him. And Yellowrobe doesn't see anything strange about, you know, another maid just coming in to replace the one he is currently eating, probably because he's absolutely langers. And he just asked the maid to pour him some wine then.
Yeah.
So
also, I think he's probably not used to being challenged on his behavior ever.
probably also true. So the dragon starts filling the cup, and he fills it half an inch higher than the rim of the glass, but it doesn't spill any. And Yellowrobe is really impressed by this trick, and the dragon says he can pour it even higher, and he keeps pouring until the wine forms like a tower, or forms a tower above the glass, like a 13-layered pagoda, and no wine is spilt. So the dragon is actually using water restriction magic to hold the wine in place, which is also actually the same magic that Monkey uses to like part water when he wants to travel underwater without having to swim, which is a nice little detail, I thought.
That's quite cool.
He's waterbending, basically. I've been watching Legend of Aang again.
It's an excellent comfort show.
Yeah, I just finished the second series today. Anyway, Yellowrobe drinks the whole tower of wine in one gulp before taking another bite out of the woman he is currently eating. That just keeps getting mentioned. He's just chewing on this woman the entire time. It's great. You all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like I should be doing the comic relief thing and making the jokes here. And I do make dark jokes, but it is also a situation that just, it's very, you know, it's, though it's historical fiction, the dynamics are very real there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Maybe not the most nuanced, but the whole kind of like, oh no, I'm going to be extremely violent to you, and then, oh no, my poor precious.
Yeah.
And I'll also gaslight you. And also the thing of, like, you know, being blamed for being abused, and also, you know, coming from an abusive household and then ending up in an abusive relationship because you've been continually conditioned for your entire life to ignore your personal comfort level and believe that this is what you deserve. So honestly, you know, it's pretty incredible that she's got the strength of character and or the strength of mind to kind of go, actually, yeah, this is fucked up and I don't deserve it and I need to get a way out. But yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah. I don't have anything to really lighten the mood with either, other than, hey, the dragon is doing stuff, yay.
The dragon is doing stuff, yay. He's been my favorite of all the pilgrims, actually.
Anyway.
No more laser eyes?
No laser eyes, I'm sorry.
Any? Okay, yeah.
It's just the horse. So Yellowrobe asks the dragon if he knows how to sing, and the dragon warbles off a song before plying him with some more wine. Just getting him as drunk as possible.
Nice.
So Yellowrobe asks for a dance as well, but the dragon says he's empty-handed, he needs a prop to dance with. So Yellowrobe pulls out his scimitar and just hands it over, and he tells him to do a sword dance.
This guy is cocky as fuck.
So the dragon starts to dance, and he waits until Yellowrobe is fully engrossed and relaxed and off guard before suddenly trying to bring the sword down on him. But Yellowrobe is fast enough still to lunge sideways and get out of the way, and just barely gets out of the way of the sword. And he grabs an iron candelabrum and uses it to block the dragon's next slash. So they move the fight outside and into the air as the dragon changes back into his original form. But the dragon realizes that even with Yellowrobe completely hammered, he's just not strong enough for this fight. And as a last desperate move, he throws the sword at Yellowrobe. But Yellowrobe is able to grab the sword out of the air with one hand, and he throws the candelabrum at the dragon with the other at the same time, And the dragon can't dodge quite fast enough, and it catches him in his hind leg. Yellowrobe chases the dragon, and he flees, and he's able to dive into the palace moat and turn invisible into the water, saving his life. And Yellowrobe, not bothering with this any further, just picks up the sword and candelabrum, heads back to the Silver Peace Palace, and drinks himself unconscious.
Okay.
So the dragon waits in the moat for an hour before gritting his teeth and heading back to the inn stable, where he turns back into a horse and lies down soaking wet with a wounded leg.
Oh no.
So he's lying there like that when Zhu Baji shows up, wondering aloud where the hell Tripitaka is and why the horse is injured. Yeah, he's just showing up after all of this, like, oh, what's going on? I was hiding in the bushes. Where is everyone? So the horse calls out to Baji, and he calls him elder brother. Baji is startled that the horse, for the first time, is, you know, talking out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And for the first time, the horse causes someone else to fall over in shock.
He had his moment in the sun.
Baji gets up and turns to run, but the horse grabs his robes in his teeth and tells him, while holding on to him, not to be afraid. So Baji asks him what the fuck happened that the horse has finally chosen to start talking now. And the dragon asks him, does he know that Tripitaka is in big trouble? And Baji has no idea what's going on. So the horse says, of course you don't. You and Sha Monk were so busy flaunting your powers to the king, you didn't think that the demon was so powerful that you might lose. At least one of you could have returned to give us news. But there wasn't a word from either of you.
He's got a fucking point.
And he goes on to explain everything that happened and how he got injured fighting Yellowrobe. Baji asks the horse if he can move, and he says that if he can, they might as well just abandon the pilgrimage and go home. The dragon back to the ocean, and Baji back to Old Gao Village. And at this, the horse grabs Baji's robes by the teeth again and refuses to let him go.
Fair.
So the horse finally says, if we want to save Tripitaka, you'll have to go ask him for help.
Yeah.
And Baji just says, who? And the horse says, go to the Flower Fruit Mountain and ask Pilgrim Sun to come back.
Yeah, I mean, who? Fuck off, dude. You know.
Baji says, no, let me go ask someone else. We're not in the best of terms, you know. When he killed Lady Whitebone, he was mad at me already for goading Master into reciting the Tight Fillet spell. I was just messing. I didn't think the old priest would actually do it, let alone banish him. I don't know how much he hates me now, but I'm sure he won't come back. And if he decides to attack me with that rod of his, do you think I'll live?
May not be any harm.
The dragon's response is very optimistic.
Oh, yeah?
He says he won't hit you because he is a kind and just monkey king. Don't tell him that Master is in peril. Just tell him that Master is thinking of him. When he gets here and sees what's happening, he won't get mad. He'll want to help.
Mm-hmm.
So Baji finally agrees, but warns that if Wukong doesn't agree to come back with him, he won't be returning either.
Yeah.
So Baji heads off to the Flower Fruit Mountain, and he arrives just as the sun is coming up, and he sees 1,200 monkeys lined up in ranks, chanting, long live our father, great sage, with Wukong sitting on a boulder observing them. So Baji is too afraid to just walk up, and he tries to sneak up to get a closer look, but Wukong sees someone skulking about and orders the monkeys to go grab the spy. So they swarm over Baji like a swarm of bees and push him in front of Wukong. And Baji has his head tucked down into his clothes, and Wukong doesn't recognize him at first. And he asks, does he want to become Wukong's subject? And Baji shows his face properly, and Wukong asks him why he isn't with the Tong Monk. He asks, did you get banished as well? Show me your banishment letter. I want to see it. He says, no, I haven't been banished. Master has been thinking of you. He told me to come invite you to come back. And Wukong just says, no, he didn't.
Which is more than fair, really.
He did not. He swore to heaven the day he wrote that letter of banishment that he never would. And Bajin says, he really was thinking of me. And Wukong says, okay.
Just say the thing. If there's one thing we know about Sun Wukong, he's got an ego the size of Mars. You know, just say, oh, I'm so sorry, and he needs your help, and we can't do it without you. He'll just go like, sounds about right, you know. I am amazing. I'll go sort this out, since you really need me that badly.
So Wukong says, okay, what reminded him of me? And Baji tries to make up a story. He says, as Master was riding on the horse, he called out at one point, disciple. And I didn't hear him, and Wu Jing claimed he was a bit deaf. And Master said, we were worthless, and that only you were smart and alert enough to answer when you were called, to give 10 replies to one question. Please come back, for the sake of me having come all the way here, at least.
Okay, well, he's smart enough to appeal to the ego.
So Wukong says, brother, sorry you had to travel all this way for nothing, but stay and let's have some fun together.
Baji's going to stay, isn't he?
Well, Baji says that he doesn't want to keep Master waiting. But Wukong insists, come on, it's your first time here. At least enjoy the scenery a bit. And Baji is terrified of Wukong, so he does not want to refuse. So he gets a tour of the Flower Fruit Mountain. There's a poem. It's all very lovely. And the two of them end up actually just chatting for a long time. And have some fruit provided by the other monkeys. But after a while, Baji drags the conversation back to Tripitaka, and he says he's waiting for both of them. To which Wukong just says, oh, I won't detain you. If you want to leave, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But he asks Baji to tell... He says to Baji, just tell Tripitaka not to think of me anymore. So Baji, again, is too afraid to press Wukong any further. So he swallows everything else he was going to say and decides to just give up and leave.
Say the thing.
Wukong thinks he's not saying something, and he tells two monkeys to follow Baji in secret for a bit and see do they overhear him saying anything. And indeed, when Baji thinks he's out of earshot, he turns back towards the mountain and starts ranting about Wukong, calling him an ape and a monster, and just giving him shit, basically. So the two monkeys hear all this and report back to Wukong about what he said. And Wukong orders his troops to seize Baji, and they drag him back to the Water Curtain Cave to face Wukong again. But if you want to find out what happens to him, that's in chapter 31.
Okay. Cool.
So the band is still broken up. In fact, probably worse off actually than they all were at the start of the chapter.
Yeah, it's sort of frustrating to me that I was very much Team Horse Dragon, and then it's like, oh no, just say that he's missed, and it's just like, no, clearly, you know, just kind of go, we need your help, great sage, equal to heaven, you are the best, we love you so much, and you're amazing, and please come back.
Yeah, the dragon actually has a strangely high opinion of Sun Wukong. He thinks he's a lot more magnanimous than he actually is.
He really isn't, what he does have is an ego the size of Mars, and if you say, we need you, because you're great, and we can't do it without you, You know, I think you'd have a better chance than appealing to, you know, and if we want to talk about magnanimity,
I do not know.
Yeah, me neither. Like, we are also asking this monkey to go back to a man who had a band put around his head and could torture him at will.
Yeah.
You know, just, yeah, it's frustrating. But yes, I look forward to the inevitable reunion.
I there's nothing like in the narration of this chapter to suggest this, but I wonder, there was a mention many, many chapters ago that Wukong just kind of has this like lingering authority over horses.
Huh.
From being like the...
From Ban Horse Plague.
From being the Ban Horse Plague. So I wonder, okay. Is there kind of, could you suggest, or I don't know if the author had this in mind or it was just a coincidence, that the horse might have a weirdly inflated opinion, or the dragon might have a weirdly inflated opinion of Wukong from being a horse around him?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's a possibility. But yes... Yeah, looking forward to chapter 31, and the band getting back together and killing the yellow rope bastard.
Yeah, I will warn you.
It's gonna get worse before it gets better, isn't it?
Yeah, don't expect to be happy with how the kind of the narrative treats 100 Flowers Shame.
Cool. Well, if anyone out there would be interested in collaborating on some fix-it fan fiction where she gets what she deserves, just hit me up. My social media details are in the show notes.
I don't know. I'll have a peruse of Archive of Our Own and see is there any like 100 Flower Shame centered stories.
Oh, there's gotta be. Like at this point, there's gotta be. There at one point was fan fiction out there about the red and green Lewis lines and how tragic it was that they would never meet. Okay, well, thank you for that. Follow me on things, I guess. Things you can follow me on are in the show notes.
Take care of yourself.
yep, do self-care.